Hello and welcome to IndieInterviews.com, a weekly radio show where we interview independent musicians to get their perspective on their music, their history, and the world around their art. This week, British MC Mike Skinner of The Streets sits down with your host, Garrison Reed, to discuss his imprint, The Beats, and various other business flirtations, the essence of American rap culture, and the relative disparities of courting women at home and abroad.
You know, it's, I think rap music is a culture. It's not a beat or a... you know, rhythm, although it is as well, you know, it's Black America, and it's all of the value systems that go with that. You know, someone like me will never be a part of that and never penetrate that, you know, which is why we've got the equivalent in England, which is different, you know.
Here is a snippet of When You Wasn't Famous from The Streets' 2006 release, The Hardest Way to Make an Easy Living. Now, camera
phones. How the hell am I supposed to be able to do a line in front of complete strangers when I know they've all got cameras?
When you're a famous boy, it gets really easy to get girls. It's all so easy, you get a miss spoil. So when you try to pull a girl who is also famous too, it feels just like when you wasn't famous.
The celebrity pages in papers don't tell tales that are always to the line of the truth. It's to the line at which it's most likely you'll have the time or enough finance to sue. Which is why it's so frightening buying papers in the morning, fearing the next might skin a scoop. Because I used to believe what I read, so now I know that others will believe that it's...
Two clarifications to this interview in regards to the game and Mike's involvement with Puff Daddy. The book The Game is a New York Times bestseller written by Neil Strauss, in which the famous celebrity ghostwriter researches the culture around pickup artists. The Puff Daddy comment relates to Two Nations and its potential placement on a tribute record produced by Puff Daddy. When you decide to make a grand Don't Come For Free, a theme record, did you find it easier or harder to make a theme record?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be aware of the whole thing at the same time as zoning in on each song. So, yeah, it kind of requires a bit more holistic thinking. But if you can get your head around it, it's not that hard, really. It's just like certain bits when you change one song, you change another song, and you know, it was cool.
At what point did you decide to not make this record a theme record?
I mean, I just... In a way, there's a theme to this album, you know? And in a way, it kind of is all linked in. Because it's more of a documentary. You know, which I'm not necessarily going to do that again either, you know? So, I always want to kind of do things differently. I think if I'd have done another story, you know, it would only have ever been slightly less exciting as when I did it the first time.
Speaking of the documentary, I heard that you're making a documentary DVD.
Yeah, well, I don't know what's going on with that, actually. I'd only really let it go if it was really good. But bits of the last song on this album are from what would be the DVD. There's just bits where I was just kind of going a bit mental.
How did the Futureheads remix come about for Fit But You Know It?
The rock side of it is more looked after by my A&R man. I tend to kind of bring the really urban side through the beats and stuff. But yeah, I'm always trying to, you know, stay on top of everything that I can, really.
Do you listen to a lot of like Futureheads and indie rock stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a bit of the new album.
Yeah, but when you're
and like Block Party and stuff. I mean, it's like I say, it's you know, it's we're surrounded by it, you know. Yeah. So
on War of the Sexes, what got you to read The Game?
That was given to me actually by a friend of Neil's, and I was living in New York at the time. And I read it in about 3 days.
Yeah, the book took me like 2 days. Did you learn from it? Do you think you really needed it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think I really need it in the UK. but no, it's just really interesting. I just like the psychology of it all. You know, it's really, really, you know, interesting and you know, just good to know, I think.
for people who've read the game and heard the song and like put two and two together, do you feel comfortable throwing it out there with your own twist on
it? Yeah, I mean, that's what I do, you know, with everything, really. You know, I think that's if you're a writer, you know, you've got to constantly regurgitate everything that you take in. Actually, the ignoring her thing and talking to him, I'd already kind of had that before I read the game. The game just kind of reconfirmed it all, but actually that concept, I'd used that before anyway, you know.
I like how it simplifies that relationship between the sexes.
Yeah, yeah.
Are there any other tracks on the record that so directly correlate the things to things you've watched or things that you've read?
Yeah. No, not really. I mean, like I say, I mean, I wouldn't say the game was kind of, it was already kind of as it was. It was just the ending of it was kind of influenced by the game, yeah. What was war? But it's not going to happen. It's a war of the sexes, never gets it blood. I beg that you learn, cause she's cleverer. How attracted to you she is, this partly your gap. But it's multiplied by how little of you she can have. Oi. The reason girls flirt is to work out their worth, whereas the men just anchor for Panky to happen. Retain this fact I'm hammering, this fact is gonna matter. What little you think you're letting by her slice, she senses you near her and smells your desire. The general rule of mine, her intellect will be higher. Your task is to make her notice you fast, but hanker while you don't close in after. She knows she can get most dudes, though she mustn't know about you. If you screw this all, Ben, then lose all your cool. That's when she ends up liking you as a friend.
I heard in a BBC interview that you had sent Lady Saab some beats.
Yeah.
What made you decide to do that? And, I mean, this was way before Def Jam or before she was really known.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I think the... She did the Fit But You Know It remix video. Oh, yeah. But I think that was like the first video she did. So I mean that was ages ago. That was years ago. Yeah. So I mean back then I was interested. I'd only just started the label and I just had the Mitchells. But I mean I'm always throwing stuff out there, you know, I'm always you know, sending people beats and I mean, nowadays we have kind of, there's like even like brokers and stuff involved, so it's a lot more business-like than it used to be. But in the old days, it was, you know, it was just literally just, yeah.
Is it better or worse now, or is that just the way that it is?
I think it's better now, to be honest, because like my broker Daryl, he. It's kind of filtering out the noise, but also, you know, hearing new people, you know. So it's what magazines do for us, you know. Normally, you know, you read a magazine and you get to see what new bands there are, you know, and the magazine kind of filters out all the really shit ones, yeah. And so you get to hear new music that's good, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important, and I think that's. Actually, we're at a point in the internet at the moment where you don't really get that on the internet too much. So, which is why the iTunes chart is actually, you know, our chart is getting more commercial. It's not getting more eclectic.
Yeah.
It's because people are listening, you know, less to tastemakers in magazines and kind of making, you know, having less kind of decision making. So it's the same with me as. Getting beats, you know, you need somewhere who's on that all the time.
When you started The Streets, did you also plan eventually to start a label?
I wanted to start a label when I was a kid, but then I just realised I'm no good at business. I'm kind of really good at thinking it all out, but actually I'm not very good with kind of relationships and stuff. I just go into myself and you know, and I have kind of long periods when I don't want to speak to anyone, you know. So it's hard to maintain a business through that. So nowadays, the reason I run a business is because you know, there's other people that can kind of do those things.
Yeah.
and that are really good at those things. And I can just think about the music, you know, and kind of be my own insane self.
Do you do a lot of scouting for new stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because I spend most of my time, you know, working, prioritizing on the things that I've already signed, which is, you know, what you should do, really. And like I say, you know, there's a lot of noise out there, you know. You know, most you know, producers that you hear, you know, kind of aren't what you're after, you know.
I read in another interview that you had recorded for Puff Daddy for like a Biggie tribute thing. What happened with that?
It just wasn't suitable for, you know, mainstream American hip-hop release.
Based on the beats or based on the accent?
I think, yeah, I mean, it's more the, you know, the culture of it, you know. It's, I think rap music is a culture. It's not a beat or a, you know, rhythm, although it is as well. You know, it's Black America, and it's all of the value systems that go with that. You know, so you know, you know, someone like me will never be a part of that and never penetrate that. You know, which is why we've got the equivalent in England, which is different. You know,
do you think labels factored Def Jam for Lady Saab and Atlantic for you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just anything, to be honest, that's, it's just, you know, getting into America is, you know, with us was all about, having it on the shelves in a place that wasn't too pressured with a team that were really passionate about it, you know, because if you stick something like that, that's as alien as the streets is, you know, onto the shelves with a major label like Atlantic. It, you know, if it doesn't perform, it gets pulled off the shelves. So, so that, you know, the only way any artist like me will have a chance in America is by going with a kind of smaller company that's got a ceiling within a major label as well.
I read that you feel that all your influences are American. What are some European exceptions?
I mean, a lot of the, you know, the UK stuff is, you know, I mean, it was like when I was growing up, it was like Speed Garage and House and stuff, you know, and drum and bass, which is, you know, which we're really good at.
Do you think your music works well with viral marketing, like through college parties and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't put on a big tour, you know, it's the only way that it can, you know, that it will grow, really. It's just, I mean, like I say, you know, my priorities really are just, you know, that there's something growing in the UK, and, you know, that's my priority, really, is, you know, making the label work, you know, and developing streets and kind of not repeating myself too much. And you know, I think, you know, if any Americans that have got into that have got into it because it was that, you know, it wasn't trying to be anything, you know. If I'd have come over on my first album and tried to do a big tour over here, it you know, it's, I don't think anyone would respect that. Next day be everyone's story of me. You taught me all the realities and turned the page in ignorance. When you're a famous boy, it gets really easy to get girls.
Thanks for listening to IndieInterviews.com, a weekly podcast where we interview independent musicians. More information about our guest today, The Streets, can be found on his website, the-streets.co.uk. Music samples in the show are from his 2006 release, The Hardest Way to Make an Easy Living, available now on Vice Recordings. For information on this release and the previous Streets releases, visit vice-recordings.com. For information, including a transcription to this interview, please visit indieinterviews.com. For feedback on this podcast and the materials used in its production, send your thoughts to indieinterviews@indieinterviews.com. Thanks again, and see you next week. We both know the scratches on my back much better than their illusion lies. I miss the bitching and shouting, but I'm glad I got out in time.